Hi, this is Sabrina George for New Comedy Radio, which is... Some people have said they don't know where the website is. The website is www.newcomedyradio.com. Okay, just for those who are not as technically brilliant as I am. Sabrina George interviewing Jay, ex-Supergirlie. Starting off, what is your full name? Your real full name?
My real full name, ooh, big secret, is Janine Madeleine Simone. That's the full name.
Fantastic.
I know. Italian,
I don't know,
you know.
Nobody ever knows you. It's almost like J-X Supergirlie.
Yeah, I'm just J Supergirlie to most people. But, yeah. Janine Madeleine Smith. Yeah.
Janine. What did your mum call you? Janine?
Mum calls me Cheeky. That's it. Always has. And it has just stuck.
So let's go. My generic question to start with everybody.
Please
When did you first start actually performing rather than thinking about performing?
With Supergirlie or
anything.
Five. I started dancing. I told my mum I wanted to be a professional dancer when I was 5 years old, and she laughed and took me anyway and didn't stop, and then I turned professional at about 14.
Oh right. Yeah. Where was this?
This was in Melbourne in Australia, and I started doing my first lot of dancing work when I was about 14, 15 years of age. And then did a performing arts course, got two agents, and danced all over the shop in Australia and Asia. Did like loads of work with Disney and did music videos and choreographed things, and just, it was nuts. Worked with Peter Andre, you know, did a bit of choreography on one of his earliest videos. It was, he was the coolest guy. Like, he was so sweet.
He comes across as incredibly sweet.
And that's just what I remember about him. He was so much fun. And all his, you know, his crew were brilliant. And we just had the best 2 days.
The only
just,
man that could handle Jordan.
I think they are a match made in heaven. I really do. Cause I think she's great. I really like her. And then
off each other perfect.
Oh, totally. And they're just, they are really the male and female of each other. I really think so. And, he's, you know, he's a good Greek boy. Good Greek lad. So, oh, Cypriot. He'd kill me if he heard that.
I don't know, yeah. Well, I sort of vaguely do. So when you say you did a course, did you do university or did you just...
No.
Like, I'm thinking evening classes or...
Well, I started doing... I was dancing pretty much most days during the week, and then when I hit probably about 15 and when I started actually... like really pursuing it, I changed academies and went to a place called Bartuccio's, which was one of the biggest ones in Melbourne at the time. It's, I think, since closed, but the guy who runs it still does loads of work all over the place. And they invited me to do a performing arts course there and loved it. And I was doing... Well, my mum wanted me to finish high school, which I was so anti, but I went, all right, fine, if it's going to make you happy, fine. So I was doing classes... like 4 nights a week and all day Saturdays in my senior year of high school, which pleased everyone. And then when I finished, I went straight into the performing arts course, which was 6 days a week, 9 till 4 every day. And then I'd do evening classes as well.
What was that? Singing, acting?
Singing, acting, acrobatics, and every kind of dance you could ever possibly imagine. And I was dancing in nightclubs at nighttime as well, just to make a bit of cash. And then I got signed up by Disney to tour with them, and I did work all over Australia with them, and then started going to Asia and doing all that for them as well.
What does that mean, touring with Disney?
Disney Live. It was fantastic.
I'm sort of thinking you're in a Mickey Mouse costume.
Well, I did a range of stuff for them. I was Minnie Mouse for a while, which was ace fun. I hosted a couple
Why
of shows
is that
as well.
Fun? I can't see
it. Was such a scream. Like, I mean, I guess the crew of people that we're working with as well, like, they were just hilarious. And it was really super hard work, and we're doing 4 shows a day in the heat.
So was this mainly for kids?
Yeah, mainly kids stuff, which was actually really fun. And then we just toured and travelled different shows and put them together, and it was amazing. Like, such a good way of learning what it's like to be involved with contracts and all that stuff as well, because they are meticulous. They're an American company, and so everything was very straightforward and really
easy. They looked
after
you properly.
Oh, 5-star everywhere we went.
Right.
They were incredible to work for, and I could never say a bad word about them. They treated me so brilliantly. So I was doing that, and then working in music videos, and singing, and then I actually met Louise, who ended up being my partner in Supergirlie, and we started. I actually auditioned for a band she was in, and I didn't get it. And I think it was my first singing audition. Like,
I was going to say, when did the singing come into it? Were you doing?
Well, I'd always sung a little bit. You know, but
I know you had a good voice.
No, I just liked it, and I thought, well, I know I can sing in tune, but I didn't push it because I thought I'm a dancer, and back then, this is like a few years ago now, even though I've been 24 for a few years now.
Absolutely.
You know, that's just how it is when you move to London, but I just was automatically put in, you're a dancer, you're not a singer, you're a dancer, and now it's different, but back then it wasn't, you were either a dancer or a singer, and although I sang bits and pieces and I knew I could hold my own, I didn't think I was a vocalist ever. And then I started having some lessons, which I thought that might help, and started working with Lou, and I didn't get the job with her, and then I wanted
to... Why did you want to work with her? Like, why did you go for that audition?
To be honest, when I first went in, the band were really cool, but I thought, oh God, she hates me. Like, she just didn't speak to me, and I was like, oh! And so I rang one of the guys, so I went, I really want to come down and see the band. Like, I know I didn't get it, but it'd be cool. And I've never done that before, where I haven't got a job and gone down anyway. And I went down, and then suddenly the girl left, and they offered me the job.
And this was also still in Melbourne.
Yeah, and Lou was working in two bands at the time, and she got me in to be the choreographer for a different band. And I did that, and then
so
I started singing
with her. So
she was,
like, the lead singer of the band?
Yeah.
So her word carried... quite a bit of weight.
Yeah, the guys liked me too, so right. Which was cool. And her boyfriend at the time was working with the band also. So
and what was that band called?
They were called the Fuzzburgers. Yeah, funny.
And so Australian.
It was so, yeah, very Aussie. And then after about a year of doing that, Lou and I decided we didn't need the guys and we'd be better on our own. So we ditched them.
And what kind of music were you doing with the Fuzzburgers?
We were just doing pop covers.
Right.
Like, but we weren't changing lyrics or anything. We were just doing mainly pop covers. And that was it. We started doing duos.
We realised at that point that you were quite strong as a singer.
Yeah, I sort of thought, oh, I can hold my own. I was still learning along the way, but I think the best way to learn anything is to be out there performing it, and then you learn. Lessons can only do so much. And we just started having a laugh and being a duo, and then after 6 months of that, we're like, well, do you want to move? Let's go to London. Let's do something else. And we thought, well, we could go to America. Oh, no, hang on, the visas are really hard to get
so
for America.
So what touring were you doing with the Fuzzburgers and initially?
We were just Melbourne-based.
You weren't travelling around at all?
Nope. Okay. So I was sort of...
So you dropped the boys?
We dropped the boys, and it was just the two of us in, and we made it a duo, and we were just doing...
And the boogie boxes, backing tracks.
Yeah. And two handheld mics and a mini disc player we'd travel with, and we would just go around and sing at places, and then we...
Was at this point you started changing the lyrics?
No.
No. You were still just doing
We
covers.
Were still just doing covers and just mimicking people that we were doing. So we were having a laugh, and just like, a bit boring, but we're earning cash, because we thought, we're going to go away, let's earn as much money as we can. And then we moved here, and within a month we were singing at Ballons in Old Compton Street, and four nights a week for shit money. So
how were you doing that? Just through word of mouth? You were just asking and asking and asking?
A friend called Michael, he knew Lou from high school. So when we moved over, that was the only contact we had, and he used to go to Ballons all the time. And he goes, oh my God, why don't you guys sing here? And we're like, okay, and suddenly a month later we were there four nights a week.
£20 a week.
Oh, I swear, it was. We were earning 40 each a night for 2 hours, non-stop.
Did you get a meal? Because they're quite nice meals at least. Thrown in for drink.
Yeah, I mean, they were pretty good.
Use the toilets.
Yeah, they let us use the toilets, which was great. And then we did that for a year, which
really?
Was...
Really? That was your only income?
We're doing that, well, 6 months in, it was our only income, and then we were doing... an agent walked in. I wish I could remember his name. But he was cool, and he ran an agency for cabaret acts, and went, I think you're great, let's do this. And we're like, well, let's turn it into a show. And Lou, she'd been a comedy writer as well. So I said, well, I'll look after the dancing and stuff and make it funny. And like the reason we started changing lyrics anyway was we're walking around Ballons and got bored. We were so bored. It was inane, especially like on a Tuesday night when it's dead. Like, oh. And so Lou would like change a couple of lyrics to see if I was paying attention to her. And like we'd just piss ourselves laughing. And like then we just thought, ah, cool, let's have more fun with it. And we'd go and act out stuff and sit on people's laps and just full of cabaret show. And then we...
what sort of songs were you choosing, mainly stuff from the charts?
We were. Mainly pop chart.
Right.
Because it was so dancey and pop. Then it was all the Spice Girls and All Saints and, like, Westlife and Boyzone and, like, all these things which lend themselves to being taken the piss out of. And we just started doing work in clubs at Two Brewers. I think that was one of our first ones.
And Clapham.
Yeah, and I love that place still.
It's a really dingy pub. Yeah. Quite famous for
nurturing. That's it. You know, I mean, anytime we'd have new songs, we'd try them out at the Brewers, because we knew we had a really supportive audience here. And the guy who ran it, Joe McJoe, was unreal. I love that man. And we would have so much fun. And then it just developed. And Lou goes, do you mind if I change loads of lyrics? And I was like, go for it. Depends if we can get to it on stage without laughing, because we would like, we'd never rehearse, and I never do anyway. And we were just like, okay, let's rehearse. And we'd get through, and we wouldn't be able to sing. Like, we're laughing so much at doing stuff, and we go, shit, okay, we can't look at each other on stage. That was the first rule. Like, cause we used to act out a lot of stuff. So the first few gigs, we can't look at each other, because we'll laugh.
So hang on, let's go back a bit. So you would turn up at the gig, and she would hand you a sheet of paper.
No, we would, like, have a little, because we were living together. So we'd have a little run through at home and go, all right, let's try. In fits, just going, oh, my God, okay. And then some of the things were so un-PC. We're like, oh my God, are we going to be able to... What did we do?
I remember some of them all.
We used to do Brass in Pocket by the Pretenders, and we didn't do anything bad, but just that, I'm special, that bit. She'd go, special, like, and horrible stuff. And we're like, oh, people are either going to laugh and go, ah, or go, oh my God. And we used to do all the... What was it? Do They Know It's Christmas by Band-Aid as well, which was in our Christmas spectacular. And every time it would start, you could just see people go, oh, no, because they just knew it was going to be so horrible. Because, you know, this is a charity song about, you know, feeding the poor children in Ethiopia. And we're like, oh, my God.
How did you change the lyrics?
Well, it was horrible.
Go on.
I do laugh about it, but I just go, oh, just the reaction of everyone when the song starts, because it's such a distinctive beginning to a song. And everyone's like, oh, no, you could just hear it. People go, what are they going to do? And we just basically sing it literally. Like, all the celebrities in it, like Bono, his, you know, famous line, tonight, thank God, it's them instead of you. Like, we'd do it, but say it quite accusingly. Thank God, it's them instead of you, you know. And we'd just say, there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas time. The greatest gift they'll get this year is life, and we'd laugh about it. And then say, they don't need any clothes, no need for videos. Do they need a Christmas time at all? Which was horrid. And people would just be like, no! And then at the end, we'd do the, you know, what was it? Feed the world, fuck the poor, it's Christmas time. No, feed yourselves, that's what we'd say. Fuck the poor, it's Christmas time. And then go, big issue, and just, like, laugh about it and be horrible. And just take the piss out of how if you sang that song literally, it was horrible. Like, really nasty, horrible. And I know they did it as a, you know, provocative, you know, God, you know, they're suffering. And we just took it literally. And we used to do that, and it was nasty.
And did you feel really uncomfortable? Did you just feel that little freak out of, like...
I felt excitement doing it, because it was like, you know, people are either going to hate it, or once they've seen the show, they understand that it's very tongue-in-cheek. We don't mean it, and it was very light and fluffy, because we do it with a big smile on our face, wearing a little sequin dress, so how can that be offensive, you know? And we used to do that, and we also did I Want to Be the Only One, which was by Eternal, that group, years and years ago. And the way she sings the first verse sounds like she's deaf, and she's trying to put it across. And it was like, yes, I hear you calling... Yeah. And Lou would just do it, like, yeah, and then, like that. And we would just be going, oh, my God, we're gonna burn in hell. We're going to burn in hell for doing this. So we just, little un-PC things like that. I mean, there's certain things we would never have gone near, like nothing about Princess Diana would ever come up. We just take the piss out of people like Britney, who we reckon was like a good 20 years older than she was saying at the time, and like Cher and people like that, and Jerry Halliwell. We used to do one about her. When she did It's Raining Men, we did, basically the whole thing was about her being bulimic, and that, you know, she'd pig herself out and then just throw up, and that's why she was so skinny. And, like, it was horrible stuff, but made it light and fluffy. So that's how that all kicked off.
And how did you develop the look of the... Were you called Supergirlies at that point, or were you just...
Yeah, we actually, while we were at Ballant, we came up with Supergirlie. We were sitting on the couch one day, and we were saying, girly, we need something girly because it's all Spice Girl and girl power and all this. Let's keep it along those lines but make it camp. and we're like girly this, girly that, and I was like, no, fuck it, super girly. That works because we're super, you know, da da da, you know, superheroes. And I always owned sequin dresses, and so I had this blue dress, which I've still got the original one, and Lou was like, oh my god, that's such a great dress, where'd you get it? And I'd bought it actually for the Peter Andre video that I'd been working on, and Peter, me and Peter, and
you could have been Katie.
I could have, you know, I could have, but I don't like Greek people very much, as in boys to go out with. I've had a bad experience.
As friends, they're lovely.
Yeah, they're lovely, but you know, I had a bad experience, can't go back. And we just, and she loved the dress and went, I've got to get one made up. I was like, go for it. So she did.
What was she wearing at that point? Just jeans and t-shirts?
She was just little skirts and tops, but she'd try and like make them a bit more glittery because I was always like feathers and, you know, I'm a dancer, you know, all that crap. So that's how it developed, really. We got these dresses done up and then we just went, oh, the sequin dresses really work, so let's do that. And then we'd get like ordinary day costume, well, not ordinary day, like cowboys and Indians, but make them glitzy camp, you know, things like that, and just go for themes as well. And we had some really cool costume designers working for us, which was unreal.
And these were people at Barnes who just saw you and said, no, how do you get thickly
no, well? These are people we just met by chance, like they'd seen us at Edinburgh and went, oh, wow.
But or this is prior to Edinburgh at Balance.
Balance was, and that was just sequin dresses.
Right.
All the time, sequin dresses. And then it developed a bit more. And then 6 months into doing Balance, actually, we met Boy George, who bought us a photo shoot for Attitude magazine, because it was a big charity, and he went, you girls are ace. And so we were just like, oh, my God, you know. And then a guy came in while
was
we were there.
Was there a feeling of word sort of spreading around amongst the gay scene that you were... like, worth watching.
Yeah. Like, Balance would be packed, especially, like, sort of Friday, Saturday nights. It was mental. Like, they would... the management of Balance would tell people we weren't working so they could have a quicker turnover of tables. And, like, because we would have crowds at the window. And, like, because we'd walk out on the street and sing. And they hate... the management hated it. And they tried everything in their power to get us fired. Like, they hated it. Like, they loved it because they got so much business. But then the turnover wasn't great because people wanted to stay and see the end of the show.
The whole thing, yeah.
So they'd make us hide and tell people we weren't working. So we were like, oh, my God. And then they got their 24-hour license, but they didn't get an entertainment license. So that was the end of us. And they basically told us, okay, tomorrow's your last night. And we were like, oh, my God. And they said, but don't tell anyone. And we were like, fuck that. So we told everyone we could and made it the biggest night ever. And they didn't like that very much. But we thought, well, we've got to go off with a bang. And by then we were working, like,
Lots of gigs a week.
It was, like, crazy.
Yeah. And so lost. And this was all around London or all over the UK?
All over the UK, actually. We were going up to Wales and oh, my God, we went everywhere. Like, just... just kept going and going and going, and we had this gorgeous gay couple who are still together to this day, Daniel and Simon, and we used to call them Mum and Dad because they used to drive us everywhere. Like, they were like, we'll take you, let's go on a road trip, and like, we would just go, and it was great fun.
And how was your relationship with Lou at this point?
It was pretty good. She's a tough one to get along with, and but I knew her quite well, so I knew her moods and everything, and you know, it was hard moving to a new country. I mean, I loved it. And but she was good at that point.
Because she came across as sort of the leader of the decision maker. Would you say that's true? That sort of, unless you really objected to something.
It wouldn't matter if I objected to anything. She'd do what she wanted anyway.
Yeah, that's what my feeling.
Yeah. So although it was a partnership when we started off, and like, I ended up doing like vocal arranging and all that, the minute I started, I go, the stronger I got vocally, the less she'd include me in things. Because I just, she wasn't the singer and I wasn't the dancer anymore. It was getting more balanced. And she was just the singer as well. And she didn't like that I was also being noted as a singer in my own right. Which, you know, hey, hats off to her. I learned a lot from her. And, you know, I'd never say I didn't. But it only started getting nasty when we did Edinburgh.
I was going to say, so there you were, buzzing around, doing the terribly fabulous things, taking the piss, having a jolly time with your two mum and dad drivers.
Yeah.
What then happened to get you to Edinburgh?
We actually had just signed with Raz Gold, who looked after Lenny Beige and everyone like that.
Yeah.
He's an agent, manager guy. He's ace. He was ace, bless him. And he was like, well, I want to book you in Edinburgh. And we're like, what's that? Like, we had no idea. like what the Edinburgh Festival was, and we're like, oh, but we're not comedians, we sing. Like, we didn't even think of ourselves as funny at that point. Well, I never think that I'm funny, and I don't think I'm a comedian, and I will never admit that I ever did that as a comedian. For some reason, I just can't believe that that's how I'm seen. Not for any other reason, that I just don't think I'm funny. And he was like, okay, I've got you in at the Gilded Balloon, which is, you know, quite a good venue, which we didn't know at the time. And he goes, we've got the main stage, but it's 11 o'clock at night. And we're like, oh, okay, like, yeah, sign us up. We didn't know Karen Corran, the wonderful lady that runs it at the time. And
who's an institution in her own right.
I adore her. She's ace. And we just kind of went.
Most people.
Yeah. And the thing is, she was very terrifying to begin with, but we were just like, yeah, good one. And probably about 6 weeks before the Edinburgh Festival, I think it was the Umbilical Brothers.
So Raz organised all
Raz
this
organised
you,
Edinburgh
right,
for us.
Lenny suggested it to you.
Well, no, Raz just saw us performing with Lenny Beige
right.
And went, right, girls, let's make it big. And at that point, we'd just been, David Furnish had seen us and asked us to sing at Alton's Tiara's, what is it, White Tie.
For yep. Those who don't know.
Sorry, Sir Alt. He was having his first White Tie and Tiara Ball, and this was 99, and David saw us and went, oh my God, you have to come and do it. And we were like, yeah, okay. So we got that. So we bought Raz as our communal date. He also told everyone we were lesbians, by the way, so we wouldn't get any interest from men, so that we wouldn't be distracted from our work.
Bastard.
So we were wondering why everyone was like the band didn't care changing in the same room with us, and they just, you know, we're like, I get it, you know. Like, anyway, then we found out years later that he told everyone we were, you know, a couple. So we were like,
so
no.
What songs did you do for Alton's White Ball then?
We did Stop Right Now by the Spice Girls, which was Fuck Right Off, being about pissed off with your boyfriend. And we did, what else did we do? We did Perfect Day. We only did two songs. And we did Perfect Day because they just released the charity version of it with all the people doing different parts, so we mimicked every voice in it, and everyone we mimicked, including Alton, was sitting in that room that night. So when we got up there and looked around, we were just like, we have made the worst fucking choice in the world.
How
of
did
our
you
songs
cope with that? That would have freaked me
well
out.
We thought, okay, he wouldn't have hired us if he didn't like us.
Yeah.
If he hates us, this will be the last time we work for him, and that's okay.
Doesn't matter.
We've done it now, and any publicity is good publicity. And the Spice Girls were there, and when Stop started, I remember Mel C got up and she was running towards the stage, and then she heard Ellery, so I sort of ran back to her seat, and she was really sweet. Her and Emma were there, and Emma didn't speak to us, and then Mel came up and was like, you girls are ace, we, you know, think you're great, and thank God you can sing. We would have been offended if you couldn't sing. And we went, hey, you know. And she goes, we want to use those lyrics when we tour. Like, she was great, like, so lovely. And off the back of that, Raz went, all right, we're doing Edinburgh. Okay, let's build this. Like, let's make it really develop. And
you didn't really have any idea except you had to do an hour's show.
Yeah, well, it was like 50 minutes or whatever it was, 55 minutes or something. And we're like, oh, okay. And he goes, you've got to do previews. And we're like, okay, all right. You know, no idea. And it was about a month before the festival, and the Umbilical Brothers, another Australian duo who are great, pulled out.
Did they win the Perrier the year before
I
or something?
I think they may have.
Yeah,
and
Tammy, successful.
Yeah, they're brilliant guys. Yeah. And they basically pulled out at the last minute of their slot. They had the main slot at the Gilded Balloon, like 8:30 or whatever it was. And so Raz rang Karen and went, I'm putting my girls in there. And she's like, well, they better be good because that's prime time and I'm not having an empty theatre, and they better be good because I don't know who the hell they are. And we had.
Can we just stop there?
Yeah.
I think we've got a good chunk. Let's end of part.